You're listening to KPFA. You're tuned into Women's Magazine. I'm Tara Darabji, and today we're joined by two women authors, and we'll be in conversation about how the publishing industry really largely silences female voices. We're joined on the line by Joy Castro. She has several books, including Island of Bones, The Truth Book, a memoir, and Hell or High Water, which Kirkus Review named as one of 2012's best books. She teaches creative writing, literature, and Latino studies at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. In studio, we're joined with us by Brooke Warner. She's a publisher at She Writes Press and the former executive director at Seal Press. And she's the author of What's Your Book? And that's a step-by-step guide to get you from inspiration to published author. Thank you both so much for joining us in KPFA.
Thank you, Tara.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
And Joy Castro, let's go ahead and start with you. I actually met you both at the AWP Writing Conference in Boston. And Joy, you were speaking on a panel about the politics of editing, which really broke down a lot about how editorial choice reinforces the systems of oppression that we live in. And, you know, you're a teacher, you're an author, and overall a writer. And how, you know, what challenges have you really faced as a woman of color in your journey as a writer?
Well, I think there are a lot of challenges that face women structurally as writers. And I've been very fortunate. I've had some amazing editors who were themselves women of color. I've enjoyed working with them. I would say that the idea that when we make editorial choices, we are simply choosing the best or what is excellent can be really problematic for women writers. We know that in our culture, generally speaking, women's work is devalued at a kind of unconscious level. We know that this happens in areas as diverse as physics, as business, and classical music. Symphony auditions are downgraded when the musician is a woman, for example. And CVs and resumes are ranked lower when the name at the top is a female name, and so on. And so industries that want to change their practices have to be very conscious, and they have to be very structural about how they go about that. For example, in the United States, many orchestras decided to implement the practice of blind auditions, where the musician sits behind a curtain and cannot be seen by the listeners. And when that happened, as soon as that happened, the numbers of female musicians in orchestras shot up. So this can happen. We just need to be really intentional and deliberate about the practices that we implement, rather than clinging to vague criteria like excellent or, you know, the best.
And Brooke Warner, I want to bring you into the conversation. You have 13 years in the publishing industry, and you work now at She Writes Press. How have you seen women be treated? And also, why have you chosen to focus your career on supporting women in publishing?
Yeah, I think I have a unique perspective because I've worked for an all-women's press. And so working at Seal Press was really about championing women, which was exciting. And to piggyback on what Joy is talking about, I mean, there are lots of experiential kinds of, not necessarily studies, but people who have done these kinds of things in writing where they, you know, try to put something out there and under a man's name and then put something out there under a woman's name, and it's exactly the same, and they're more likely to get, you know, responses from editors when they're male names, you know, so you see that kind of thing percolating through in writing and in publishing circles for sure. And so at Seal Press, you know, the mission has been since 1976 to publish women's voices, and that was an exciting thing to be a part of. And then we could certainly open up the conversation to women of color in publishing as well, which is more complicated. You know, I mean, in all the years I was there, we went through some of our own ups and downs with that, you know, just in terms of how do you even go about raising the consciousness. You know, when I first got there, it wasn't even something that I necessarily thought about when reviewing authors who were coming in. And over our years there, you know, in part because of some missteps, we really changed our tune on it. And so it's like you have to be confronted in order to make change. And then that became very important. And now She Writes Press, it's a hybrid model. You know, it's author subsidized. And so in terms of diversity on the list, it's something that, you know, we so want and really are, you know, there's always these conversations to have around how to do that, you know. And so, but the whole idea of being working with women in publishing in general has just been an absolute passion of mine because of Seal. And then She Writes existed as a social networking site for women writers, specifically to support women writers. And what we saw was that there was just this natural opportunity for a publishing component of that, in part to bring women's voices to the forefront. You know, we have really built She Writes Press as a platform for women writers because the barriers to entry in traditional publishing are so high.
And how have you seen women be nurtured by that?
Well, definitely at She Writes, they're nurtured just by the community. I mean, it's been astounding to see the ways in which they support one another and the groups and the conversation. And sometimes the conversations are hard, which I think they should be, you know, around challenging one another or, you know, just saying this needs to happen. Why don't we do it? So there's advocacy. There's, you know, there's lots of different kinds of things going on the site. And She Writes Press is just 1 year old, you know, so we hope to be continuing to hear back from our authors about ways that we can continue to support. I mean, it really is a service at this point, and She Writes itself is the community.
And Joy Castro, you're also a teacher at the University of Nebraska. How have you really seen, you know, in terms of admissions and subject matter and departments, the institutionalizing of both racism and sexism in academia?
That's a great question. And the graduate committee at University of Nebraska is really conscious and aware of that, and I think we're doing a really good job bringing in PhD students and master's students who are very diverse and gender balanced. I want to go back, though, to something I really loved that Brooke said about the necessity of confrontation. And this issue about gender balance and also writers of color balance doesn't disappear by itself. It doesn't disappear, you know, if we hope it does, and or if we just wait for the culture to change. It really does need to be something that we face. And I think that the conversation has been sparked by the VITA count, which we were talking about at AWP, VITAweb.org, the organization that looked at some of the top, you know, most hegemonic journals and magazines in the United States and Great Britain, and did a count how many women have bylines, how many books by women are reviewed in the pages of these journals, how many reviewers are women. And then they made these beautiful, simple, elegant pie charts and put them out there. And those are incontrovertible. You look at them and you're like, oh, okay, well, you know, we either have to do something about this, as some editors like Rob Tillman at Tin House have done, or we need to pretend that this issue is not important, and other editors have gone that route.
And Joy Castro, as you've responded and worked on this over the years, do you ever sort of get just frustrated of, kind of, I don't know, sometimes I feel like I'm like the squeaky wheel constantly, and, you know, I mean, I've been at this a little over a decade or maybe a little more than that, but it's just, you know, it's kind of like you're all, it's this sort of, you're always coming back to the same issues and bringing them up, and there is change, but it's also sometimes feels a little bit like a burden, that when you come to the table, it's like bringing other people up to speed often, regardless of whether it's the writing or, you know, you're constantly sort of working with folks to help bring about that confrontation, sometimes in gentle ways and sometimes in not so gentle ways.
Is it an extra burden on women writers and on people who care about this? Yes, it is. It's a burden that's worth taking on, though, for ourselves as writers and for future writers. I think if we think about the connection of voice and voicelessness to human rights struggles and civil rights struggles, then we can see that this disparity between the presence of women in our culture and women of color in our culture and the absence of their cultural representations, we can see that this is, you know, it has political implications, and this is an issue around justice and how we are shaping our culture.
And Brooke Warner, can you talk a little bit about exactly how what She Writes Press does, and if women are interested, how they can contact you?
Yeah, thank you. She Writes Press, like I said, it's a hybrid publisher. It's a partnership publisher. I mean, you're seeing these things crop up all over the place. And what that really means is that it is author subsidized, but you're led through a process that feels like traditional publishing. And so there's a lot of hand holding. There's a lot of collaboration, and it's not just going through the mill of self-publishing. I think it's a creative enterprise, but it is asking for the author to put their money up front. And then the royalties on the back end, you know, are much, much higher. They're, you know, 70% to 85% instead of 7.5%. So it's kind of a profit sharing, or we take a management fee is really what we call that. And we have a website at shewritespress.com. But regardless of whether this is a track that women are on, I would encourage them to join shewrites.com, which is free, and just participate in these conversations. I would love to see, and there's some conversations like the ones that we're talking about going on there, not as many as there should be. And to respond to what you were saying just about the burden that's on you, I mean, I find myself when I sit on panels and things, you know, just astounded by, you know, it is almost like a backlash, because I think there are so many women writers and so many aspiring women writers, and they're the ones who attend conferences. They're the ones who are doing all of this work around their writing. And so, you know, I sat on this panel about women in writing, and there were 400 people in the audience, and some women stood up and said, "Well, what about the men?" And I just thought to myself, oh my gosh, what is this conversation? You know, it's like there. So you have to constantly remind people of where we are and how far we've come and how far there is still yet to go. And so it does get a little discouraging at times, you know, and that's why I just think it's so important. So thank you for having this conversation today.
Absolutely. And Joy Castro, in our last few minutes wrapping up, what has been most instrumental for you on your journey and in your career as a writer? What has been your biggest source of inspiration?
Looking at the trajectories of women writers who have come before me, looking at the obstacles they've faced, the work they've done, the amazing literature they've produced, that keeps me going.
And if people want to check out your work and learn more about what you do, how can they?
Oh, thanks. I have a website. It's joycastro.com. So.
Joycastro.com. And Brooke, one more time, She Writes.
Yeah, shewritespress.com is the press, and shewrites.com is the social networking community that is 22,000 women strong and free to join. So
22,000 women strong and growing. Well, thank you both so much for joining us on Women's Magazine.
Thanks, Tara.
Thank you.
You're tuned into KPFA. I'm Tara Darabji. This is Women's Magazine. Stay tuned.